Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Now, streaming live on the Marijuana Agenda.
Oh, gnarly. What are you people? On dope?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio.
Hey, this is great, man.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
Marijuana is listed as a Schedule I drug. That is absurd.
Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ. That's 650-534-2565.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Hey, man. Am I driving okay?
Toker Talk Radio is your chance to make your voice heard in the marijuana nation.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to Enema Man and Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
Send that message with clarity that good people don't smoke marijuana.
Now let's get to Toking and Talking with your host, Russ Belville.
All right, welcome back, everybody, from beautiful legal potland, Oregon, where the weather has returned to Portlandian proportions. All this week, supposed to be 50s and gray and cold. That was our main... We got teased. Last week was a tease. 70s and beautiful sunny days. Oh, yeah, Portland, it's summertime. Nope. Nope. Back into line. Young podcaster. I'm not that young anymore, but what the hell. Hey, welcome to Toker Talk Radio. Coming up in this hour, all sorts of interesting stories. We're taking a look at the wink, wink, nudge, nudge going on in Florida medical marijuana in our A block right before our 20 after break. After the 20 after break, we're going to take a look at some money issues with respect to marijuana stocks and the program in the state of Minnesota that is bleeding money. Then in the C block, the last half hour of the show, we will take a look at the nation of Canada and how it is poised to dominate the international marijuana market. Oh, come on, America, get on the stick here. We can't let the Canadians beat us in weed, eh? And then in our closing segment, we'll take a look at a gummy bear overdose story and a little compare and contrast with other sort of drug overdose stories that are and are not out there in the media. But first, let's get to some stories here in the opening that have me shaking my head. Well, the first one doesn't have me shaking my head. I'm really happy about this first story. Coming out of Israel, where Reason reports that Israel has decriminalized marijuana possession. And this is fantastic news. Under the plan, which was endorsed by the public security minister, this was approved by the Israeli cabinet. And this was a conservative, by the way, a member of their conservative party that introduced this. People who are 18 and older, caught with up to 15 grams of marijuana, would be subject to a fine of 1,000 shekels. That works out to about $275 in U.S. dollars. They double that for a second offense. Third offense would be probation with possible treatment or additional sanctions like suspension of the driver's license. Criminal charges at discretion of police available only after a fourth offense. Now, the good news here is that possession of 15 grams or less in Israel right now is currently punishable by up to 3 years of prison. But they've really been looking the other way recently. Since 1985, people caught with small amounts of marijuana are usually not supposed to be arrested on the first offense and decide whether or not to bring charges on the subsequent offenses. Arrests for marijuana possession in Israel fell 30% from 2010 to 2015. This is a population of 8.2 million people. And in 2015, they arrested 3,400 people. For weed, out of 8.2 million, 3,400. In comparison, in the United States, the population is 40 times as big, okay, 40 times more people in America, but we arrested 575,000 people for marijuana possession. That's 168 times as many. Or by comparison, as a rate of population, we arrested over four times as many people for weed in America as they did in Israel. Now, in other news, this one coming to us from NASCAR, the National Association of Stock Car
auto racing. Did I get that right? Did I win? I'm not sure. Is that correct, judges? Yeah, judges telling me that is correct. But in NASCAR recently, we've got a... Whoa! Hey! Whoa! Oh, shit! Damn. Watch out, guys. We got a story out of NASCAR here where the racer Carl Long, this was in a race in Kansas City, Carl Long was forced to strip the logo of a Colorado-based marijuana vaping company from his car Friday after NASCAR said it violated rules governing sponsorship and paint schemes. So he had the logo for a Colorado-based company called Veedverks. And it was on his yellow number 66 car, but the NASCAR spokesman said it was never vetted, never approved. And when they found this logo on the hood, they had the crew members remove it before the car went to the track. According to nobody, NASCAR officials rejected the cannabis logo because it was distracting from all of the beer, boner pill, pharmaceutical, and oil company logos in NASCAR. So, yeah, that's okay, not true. But still, come on, guys. This is the kind of discrimination that we are still facing, right? Where it's perfectly okay to have Budweiser and Coors Light and Miller and, you know, I don't know exactly who's sponsoring in NASCAR anymore, but I've seen it in the past, and there's no reason legal marijuana shouldn't be in there. Show them how fast we really can go. We're back in just 2 minutes. Stick around.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal Potland, Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House. Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb and licensed by the City of Portland.
It's time for cannabis facts about teen drug use from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A recent survey by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control indicates that in states that have legalized medical marijuana, the rate of marijuana consumption among high school students has not increased. In fact, in legal states like Colorado, teen use has actually decreased significantly. It's simply no longer a big deal for teenagers in legal states. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the voice of the industry from the National Cannabis Industry Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Vacation to North Dakota, you know, because they've got a town called Argusville. What are you smoking there, boy?
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
All right, welcome back. And in this segment, I want to talk about the wink-wink nudge-nudge that's going on in the state of Florida. There's a story coming out of WLRN in Miami, and Associated Press reporting on this one. Florida marijuana dispensary says new product not meant to be smoked. The Florida Medical Marijuana Dispensary says it is not violating state law by selling cannabis that could potentially be broken down and made into pot that can be smoked. Trulieve began selling its first whole flower cannabis product earlier this week that is meant for vaping. The buds in the vaporizer cup, however, could also be used in joints, pipes, or bongs. Vaping is allowed under state law, but smoking is prohibited. Trulieve CEO Kim Rivers said the company has issued warnings to patients that the product should only be used for vaping. So I love this story because it's like, this is the 21st century version of these pipes are for tobacco use only that you used to see in the head shops, right? Wink. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll only use this big, long, curly Q pipe for my tobacco use. Yeah, you know, we'll load up some fine pipe tobacco in that and get right on it. So, you know, it's like they're doing the same thing in Florida, and any state that passes access to whole plant cannabis, but then foolishly tries to say no smoking of that whole plant cannabis is just kidding themselves and really just setting up some poor sap to be the test case of a vindictive sheriff or prosecutor that wants to go after somebody because they caught him smoking a joint. It's just insane. This is a legislature trying to mandate how medical care should proceed and trying to dictate to patients what is the best way for them to be able to consume their cannabis medicine. And it's all because, and I've mentioned this before on the show, the demonization of tobacco smokers is what's gotten us here to this position. It's been the demonization of just the act of smoking, that something is burning and you're inhaling that smoke is evil and must be opposed in every way. And it just ignores the fact that the smoking of cannabis for many patients is the most cost-effective and time-effective method for them to be able to medicate. It's just, first of all, if you allow vaporization, that's great. And I promote vaporization, right? The smoking of marijuana is not necessarily the healthiest way to consume it. I'm willing to concede that. The act of burning vegetable matter, whether it's a campfire or tobacco or cannabis, produces hydrocarbons that are not necessarily good for the lungs. And I'm willing to concede to the studies that show that we have a little bit more phlegm. I've got to cough up a little phlegm from time to time. That's a given. I'll accept that. But you always have to, in medical treatment, you have to weigh, you know, it's a cost-benefit analysis, right? There could be side effects from taking an aspirin, but the benefit from taking the aspirin outweighs the side effect. There could be a side effect. There could be a risk of death from a surgery, but the benefit from the surgery outweighs that risk. And for so many patients, the benefits, the massive benefits they get from smoking marijuana far outweigh the extra cough or phlegm they're going to get from regularly smoking pot. Number one, the transportability of it. The transportability of it. So easy to just have some weed and some papers and roll a joint when you need to be able to inhale your medicine. You can find a lighter and papers just about anywhere. Even in states that have still maintained marijuana prohibition, you can find lighters and paper. And in many cases, that's a safer option for people that are, you know, stuck in non-medical states. That's a safer option because of paraphernalia laws that criminalize having a pipe or anything else to smoke out of. And sometimes you can get away with the rolling papers. Regardless, vaporization requires an electricity source of some sort, a battery or a plug-in. And that's not always something that's available for people on the go. If a patient wants to go out in the wilderness or be away from a power source in some way, go out for a walk or a bike ride or something, and has a vape pen with one of those batteries, and those batteries end up dying, it's of no use. And these aren't, we're not talking like, you know, AA, AAA batteries you can just walk into a store and get some, Although maybe I suppose some vaporizers have that option, but usually the vape pens we're talking about are the kinds that plug into the USB port and are rechargeable. And you just don't find those anywhere. So it's not always the best option for people. And furthermore, to have this law saying, you know, you can have whole plant, but you can only vaporize it. Whatever you do, don't smoke it. Just breeds a disrespect for that law. Just breeds a disrespect for it from the perspective of everybody knows we're violating the law. And it just makes us all, you know, a little hypocritical. So why even make that distinction in the first place? Why ban the smoking of cannabis? If you're going to give people access to the medicine, let them use the medicine in the way that's best for them under their doctor's supervision. The thing I fear about these kind of laws that get written to allow whole plant but ban smoking is that kind of concedes to our opponents that smoking is something that should be banned. That smoking is a bad thing and we ought to do what we can to ban it. And then when they find that banning it didn't work, that yeah, some people vaporized, but other people smoked, then they'll be compelled to get rid of the whole plant access. They'll be compelled to, well, we tried it your way. We couldn't stop people from smoking it. So now we have to ban whole plant access altogether. And then we're back into that box canyon where medical marijuana becomes something that fulfills the bottom line of the pharmaceutical companies that are going to make these cannabinoid extracts that you have to go to the store to get because you don't have access to that whole plant cannabis anymore. Now, already in Florida, they can't grow their own. So it'd be very easy to make an amendment to that, to the regulations to ban the access to the whole plant cannabis. Don't know how that'd work out since it's a constitutional amendment. Might be a high bar to clear, but you know the legislators are going to want to go that way. It's interesting how the legislature in Vermont has moved forward with home grow legalization without any sort of place to shop for it, but meanwhile has medical marijuana dispensaries at which patients can purchase whole plant cannabis. Don't think that's not going to get abused as well. While we got the wink and nudge going on in Florida, meanwhile up in Vermont, you're going to have every recreational consumer who wants to be able to buy some cannabis making really good friends with every patient they know. Hey, next time you stop into that, I'll tell you what, I'll buy your ounce of medicine for you if you split it with me, right? You get a free half ounce and you give a half to me, right? And what's to stop that from happening? And since Vermont is going to legalize marijuana and it's going to be legal to give marijuana to one another, what's to stop that from happening? All you're doing through this grow and give legalization in Vermont while maintaining commercial dispensaries in Vermont is subsidizing those medical marijuana dispensaries to be selling far more marijuana than they would have been. And people are then going to look at that spike and say, hey, look, after you legalized, suddenly your medical marijuana patients were consuming a whole lot more medicine. Then we once again get that wink, wink, nudge, nudge going on, and Vermont's going to have to address that situation. Now, the good news in Vermont is legalization set up with a recommendation for a study commission. And then the study commission will take a look at those numbers. They'll say, look, we could have tax and regulate, or we could continue to turn a blind eye while people are shopping at the dispensaries or going across the border into Maine or going across the, you know, a couple borders. You have to cross New Hampshire, but still, or going across the border again to Massachusetts, where they have legal sales, they'll start to recognize how much money they're losing through the lower taxed medical system in Vermont and through the taxes going out to Maine and Massachusetts. And that commission will recognize that, hey, we need to tax and regulate this stuff. And that legalization of home grow and possession without some sort of commercial regulations doesn't mean that commerce won't exist. Commerce will continue to exist the way it's always existed in Vermont and throughout the rest of the United States. And that's by home growers cultivating a few plants and selling them back and forth among their friends. And that can continue in Vermont. We're fine with that. And by legalization of home grow, you've made it impossible to stop that. But if that's going to be happening, if the commerce is going to be taking place, why not regulate it, allow businesses to be formed, to be regulated, inspected, and taxed, and contributing to the greater good in the state of Vermont, the greater society in the state of Vermont. If you allow the grow and give to be entrenched, who knows when it'll ever change.
Oh, 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 oh!
All right, that sound means that it is 4:20 here in the Pacific time zone. Time for us to take our union-mandated safety briefing. I'm feeling pretty safe today, so we'll just go with the joint. When we come back, we'll talk about marijuana and money.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Normal. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. Join me for A Sensible Future from Students for Sensible Drug Policy every other Tuesday here on the Marijuana Agenda. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Pod 2.0.
It's not your father's Woodstock weed.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everybody. And in this segment, we're going to talk about marijuana and money. So I got a lot of the former and not a lot of the latter, so I'll try to keep up. But this discussion has to do with investing. A lot of investment happening in the marijuana space these days. Of course, you hear all the touting from ArcView and New Frontier and BDS and all these other companies that talk about how, you know, cannabis industry is the fastest growing industry, biggest industry, $6.7 billion industry projected to be in the $20-30 billion range in just a few years, yada, yada, yada. And there's no doubt about it. I mean, we are certainly seeing massive amounts of growth in this industry. And if the home prices and rental prices in the Portland area and Denver and Seattle and every other city that seems to legalize, if those are in any indication, then yeah, there's certainly a big boom in cannabis. But right now, when it comes to the investment side of things, maybe not so much. There's a story here on The Motley Fool. That's fool.com. It's entitled, Surprise! The very first marijuana stock ETF has lost investors money. It's been a dud so far, they say. Now, stock ETF is an investment fund that's traded like stocks, except it's a bigger fund that holds lots of stocks, commodities, bonds, that kind of stuff. Just a big grouping of these. And the idea is to pool these investments so that an investor's not dropping all their money on one or two or three or six different companies. Instead, they're dropping into this fund that then is investing in lots of these companies in this space, kind of spreading the risk out sort of thing. An ETF is what they call it. And so this ETF, the very first one that was created is called Horizons Medical Marijuana Life Sciences ETF. And if you want to look for this online, it's under the code TSX:HMMJ. Horizons Medical Marijuana Life Sciences ETF has actually lost value. The shares of the ETF have lost more than 4% from where they were initially priced on their first day of trading a little more than 5 weeks ago. On May 9th, they hit an all-time low. Now, this Horizons Medical has holdings in 16 medical marijuana companies as well as ancillary companies that are associated with marijuana cultivation. For example, Scott's Miracle-Gro, they're SMG on the New York Stock Exchange. Scott's Miracle-Gro, lighting and nutrients and soil for cannabis growers, they're the third biggest holding, the third biggest company in the ETF for this Horizons Medical. So that's an example, right? It's not all medical cannabis companies, some, you know, soil companies and other companies as well. So the problem that the investment experts are saying with this ETF, according to Motley Fool, is fundamentals still matter. They're saying that the weed industry is supposed to grow by 25% over the next 5 years, but according to the investment gurus here, many are starting from a small sales base, right? Only a few states, so smaller states. In fact, California has not come online yet, so the rest of the states pale in comparison. And they talk about, you know, of course, it's still a federally illegal substance, so you've got all the restrictions of being able to distribute across state lines. You can't do that and can't sell internationally. We'll talk a little bit about that in our next segment. So the pot stocks aren't doing so well, necessarily. Now, GW Pharmaceuticals, you can find them on NASDAQ at GWPH. GW Pharmaceuticals is doing okay. They got a $2.8 billion valuation, and they're getting some successful trials from Epidiolex. That's their CBD oil spray for kids with epilepsy. And, you know, it's likely to get approved, although, you know, still waiting on the FDA on this. But it's going to be a year or more before GW makes any money off of Epidiolex. And, you know, still got the DEA they have to deal with as well. So according to Fool.com, investors are paying about 40 times what Wall Street expects GW Pharmaceuticals to generate in profits by 2020. So they're spending 40 times more on it, and they're still 4 years away from expecting to make that kind of money. Another one out there, Aurora Cannabis, is the second largest holding in this ETF. It has this 800,000 square foot growing capacity that they're trying to come online with this to octuple how much growing capacity Aurora Cannabis is going to have. This is one of these Canadian medical marijuana producers, and they're just one of the few that are profitable there. A lot of these stocks are based, you know, on the inflated bubble that we still have, that everybody's all high on the cannabis industry, but not recognizing that as much as the growth is predicted, we still face a ton of hurdles that make it hard to run a profitable business. The IRS 280E problem, as far as not being able to deduct, you know, cost of goods sold that most businesses can deduct and other deductions. We have the problem of not having access to banking that presents all sorts of hurdles to these new companies. So everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, hoping this is the next dot-com bubble. This is the next big thing, but need to be cognizant of the fact that, you know, there's still a lot of things to overcome. And one example of this comes to us from the state of Minnesota. Minneapolis Star Tribune has an article entitled "Minnesota Medical Pot Providers Run $11 Million in the Red. The continuing losses that hint at systemic problems with the state's tightly regulated program, despite a recent expansion that allowed thousands more patients to buy the medication." So this is, Minnesota is the perfect example, and you could have predicted this was going to happen, right? Contrast that to the state of Oregon, where I'm talking to you from. We've had medical marijuana since 1998. There has not been a year that our program hasn't run a surplus. $1 million surplus they have year after year because we didn't have super tight regulation like this. You know, Minnesota is one of these medical cannabinoid states. You can't get whole plant cannabis, has to be vaporized, has to be tinctures and oils and sprays and pills. It's all you can get. And the condition list is extremely restrictive, although, like they said, they've expanded it recently. But it's just really a far too over-regulated program. And thus, it costs too much to run for how few patients can actually jump through those hurdles. Now, I don't care, right? Hey, I don't care if keeping people out of cages for using marijuana, especially as medicine, costs the state money or makes the state money. I don't care. You do it because it's the right thing to do. But this doesn't look good. And it should serve as a warning to legislators, if they were smart, that are looking at medical cannabis regulations, to just ease up. You keep wanting to treat this like it's PCP, porn, or plutonium, and it's just pot. People have been smoking in your state for years, and they're going to continue to smoke it in your state, regardless of what kind of medical marijuana law you put together. And you put together these strict, over-regulated laws. The only people you hurt are the most desperate. The only people you hurt are the most vulnerable people. A guy like me, you know, healthy pot smoker, maybe I could say I use it for chronic pain or for anxiety or for sleep disorders, but I just like to smoke pot. But I could make a medical argument for any of those things. You're not going to stop me. I'm going to find a guy. If it's illegal, I came up in Idaho. I'm going to find a guy. I'm going to find somebody. I'm going to find a way to get some weed. I'm going to smoke it. It doesn't matter if you have absolute prohibition, whether you have medical marijuana or whether you legalize the stuff, I'm going to be just fine. It's that guy in the wheelchair. It's that lady going through chemo. It's that kid with epilepsy. They can't go find a guy. So when you make these overly restrictive programs, those people are going to jump through the hoops. They can't find a guy. They don't have a choice, and they're severely ill. They don't have a choice. They're going to do everything it takes. They're going to sell whatever it takes. They're going to move if they have to. They're going to do what it takes to get on that program. But so few of them will actually be able to jump through those hoops. That's why Minnesota's losing $11 million. Meanwhile, the people who can't jump through the hoops but can find a guy or can go to another state or can get it somehow, they're not helping your program, and they're still getting the medicine they need. And those that can't jump through the hoops and can't get the medicine, well, they're just dying. They're just suffering. And why should they? Look, we've had medical marijuana on the West Coast for 20 years in California and going on 19 here in Oregon and Washington. And look, this sky didn't fall. And the more people that get access to it, the better. It reduces your state welfare rolls. It reduces your state medical costs. You don't have to pay for all the prescription pills that they need to take if they had access to cannabis. It's really a win-win scenario. The more people you allow into the program, the easier you make it to get into the program. People who generally want to follow laws, people who are sick and people who are disabled, it's not like they want to be pot criminals. They want to be interstate traffickers. They want to risk going to jail. Give them decent enough hoops, you know, low enough hoops to jump through, and they'll do it. They'll follow the regulations. They want to be legal if they can, but not if you're going to make it ridiculously over-regulated. And in fact, that is even starting to spread here to Oregon. Recently, the Oregon legislature made a bunch of changes to our medical law, like you can't register a garden where there's no street address. I happen to know one of the greatest medical cannabis growers of all time, a guy named John Sajo, works tirelessly for patients, has been in this state for decades. He goes back to the 80s when they failed with the legalization back then, you know, going up against Ronald Reagan and Just Say No and still fighting. This guy, he lives in the middle of nowhere. Like, I got invited to go to his house one time, and I said, well, what's the address? He goes, well, it doesn't have an address. let me tell you, it's like, follow U.S. Forest Road 8. Go a fur piece until you find the big log, and then take a run. I mean, this guy lives in the middle of nowhere and produces pounds and pounds and pounds of medicine for free for patients year after year. They're not going to let him register a grow site because it doesn't have a street address? This is insanity. It's not PCP, porn, or plutonium. It's just pot.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
New beginner guitars and banjos are often constructed much better than ones built before your time. Why struggle? Get a new instrument or fix the old one. The trusted professionals at the Fingerboard Extension will evaluate your instrument for free. Repairs are priced for people who work for a living. Stop by the Fingerboard Extension downtown Corvallis at 120 Northwest 2nd Street today or check out its inventory on the web at fingerboardextension.com.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
The Marijuana Agenda. Like the liberal agenda, but with profits. Ka-ching.
I'm Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 4 weeks for the Celebrity Marijuana Zone with Steve Bloom from celebstoner.com. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
Hello, Mr. Man. Hi. I'm working. I'm sorry. No food till this is done.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
Welcome back, everyone. 38 after the hour. Just changed. Welcome back to the program. We were talking about home state of Oregon here, where they're making some major changes to the medical marijuana program. And it's just, it's frustrating and it's kind of inevitable in some fashion. Let's recall that medical marijuana is an exception to prosecution for marijuana, right? That was the whole point of it, was let's get the patients, get the sick and dying off the battlefield of the war on drugs. If anybody deserves to be first in line to not be prosecuted, it should be the patients. Completely agreed. But that idea was we had to do that because there was this prohibition that was affecting people. Well, if you end that prohibition to some extent, if you legalize marijuana for all adults, to some extent, you also don't need as much of an exception anymore in a lot of people's mind. It's like, okay, if everybody can have weed, if everybody can grow four plants in their house and everybody can have an ounce on them and everybody 21 and older can go to a store, then what's the point of having the medical marijuana anymore? Now, there's obviously a few problems with that thinking. The first problem with that thinking is people under the age of 21. You got to keep a medical marijuana program because you can have young people, especially when you're talking about guys that are 18, 19, and 20 who can sign up for the military, go overseas, have a traumatic brain injury, lose a limb, get post-traumatic stress, come home, and what? You're not going to let them smoke weed? Come on now. Under legalization, you got to be 21, right? Sorry, here, have some tea. Oxycontin, more like it. there's no reason. That's one of the main reasons I see that you got to keep a separate medical. You got to keep medical marijuana in some fashion to deal with the younger patients. Absolutely got to deal with that. But number two, it's absolutely a certainty to me that medical marijuana patients are going to need greater privileges, greater limits, if you will. If the prohibition for all adults was removed without limits, if anyone 21 over could buy as much weed as they want, grow as many plants as they want, within a reasonable limit, like not a farm, but, you know, dozens of plants, sure. If anybody could do that, then yeah, now you've got really a hard time making the argument you need a separate medical program. But the legalization we have isn't really full legalization yet. It's still extremely limited to just an ounce and four plants. And that's not four plants per person. That's four plants in a household. And that's not going to work for even a single marijuana patient in many cases. Four plants isn't going to work, much less a family where maybe one or two or three or four people have illnesses that need cannabis treatment. So long as there's going to be ridiculously low limits on the adult use of marijuana, there's got to be a medical program and medical allowances that allow for greater limits. And to the same extent, there needs to be that for potency in certain products like edibles and tinctures and such. If they're going to make these low limits on the serving size in a chocolate bar, it can only be 10 milligrams of THC, which I got 10 milligrams of THC in my little finger right now. So not going to do a thing to me. I would need to eat like four or five of them chocolate bars before I'd start feeling something. So long as that's the case, then you got to have medical on the side for having greater limits in that respect. But then you run into another sort of problem. And that's the problem of, so long as medical has greater privileges, people on the adult use side are going to want to skip over the line, you know, sneak over the other side and take advantage of the greater benefits, the lower taxes, the higher potency, the greater limits, and so forth. So now I get that cost-benefit analysis. How much is it being abused versus how many people are being helped? Is it such a big deal if some 18, 19, 20-year-old recreational consumers manage to find a way to get a medical marijuana card and smoke some weed? Is that such a terrible evil that we need to then hurt patients that are actually benefiting, the ones that actually need the 24 plants? And it goes back to what I was saying earlier. When you make restrictions, you don't hurt the people trying to skirt the restrictions. You don't hurt the 18-year-old, 19-year-old trying to get weed. They'll find a way to get weed. You do hurt that paraplegic who's needing the 12 plants to cultivate, to make into, press into oil for massive amounts they need to deal with a bout of chemotherapy or whatever. So it's, you know, life's full of trade-offs. And to me, I think, hey, you know, a little bit easier access for an 18-year-old kid to get some tested weed that's been taxed, or at least a little, or been inspected some. And if that's the cost that allows the really sick person to still be able to have a dozen plants or a couple dozen plants, so be it. Of course, that's not a very easy political argument to make. It's okay if teenagers are smoking pot. Sick people need medicine, right? Hard argument to make, but it's the right one. It's the right one to make. And it's these weird, you know, it's like lately we've been talking about how these days as cannabis consumers, we look forward to the days when our children and grandchildren will say, "Grandpa, did they really used to lock people in cages for cannabis medicine?" Right? But there's really a bunch of those steps in this process. The next generation after that is going to look back at our generation of legalization and go, "Did they really limit people to an ounce and just four plants? Why?" Well, we have to explain that because there's still places where it's illegal. And if we don't limit people in the places where it's legal, they'll supply the people in the places where it's illegal. As if they're not already. Like, that's the other thing. Like, we get one of the arguments for, again, not letting John Sajo grow his free medical marijuana for dozens of patients in a place that doesn't have a street address. One of the arguments is, well, you know, these guys are staking out places in the rural areas, and they're diverting water, and they're not John. I'm not saying John does. He's best a guy as far as grower and all that. But you know, the argument from the opponents is, well, they're going to divert it to the black market. We've got all these pounds and pounds of marijuana that has made its way across Interstate 80 in Utah, and we found all this weed in Nebraska. It came from Oregon medical growers. Blah 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 blah. That's their argument, right? And of course, the response is like, so Oregon never distributed weed east before? Only when medical happened, this started, right? It's not gotten worse. It's about the same as it's always been. But now that it's attached to something that's a change in people's lives, is freaking them out. And then there's the consideration. When you talk about the evolution here, because we're going through these steps where we're in this partial legalization because there's still prohibition in places. What happens when eventually, and I think it's going to come sooner than we think, the federal government gives up on cannabis, removes it from the Controlled Substances Act, and all the states have some form of legalization? Now imagine that. The legalization may be different, might be, nice and easy going in the West, might be really strict in the Midwest, no home cultivation, only dispensary sales. Maybe in the East it's no home grow, or no sales, but home grow is allowed. There might be a patchwork of different legalizations, but imagine the world, imagine the United States, when it's legal in all the states, and at that point, what becomes the rationale for 1 ounce limits and 4-plant gardens or 6-plant gardens? What? Like here in California, I'm a criminal if I have 7 plants, but in Oregon, I'm a criminal if I have 5 plants. But why? What happened in between those 2 plants there? And much like we've seen a homogenization of our alcohol laws, where pretty much, well, across the country, you got to be 21. We have a nationwide 21 age and pretty much similar alcohol laws. Like most places, your bars close at 1 or 2 in the morning. Some places they go till 4. Other places they never close. But you can usually come up with a baseline like, 1 in the morning, the bars will be closed, right? Most places have liquor stores that you have to go to rather than buying it in the store. Although there's a lot of them where you can just buy liquor in the store, but generally, they're kind of homogenized, right? So are we going to end up with a blanket kind of homogenization across the United States where 1 ounce becomes the default? Everybody's just used to it being 1 ounce because that's what everyone legalized other than Washington, D.C. and Maine so far, 2 ounces and 2.5 ounces respectively. But does that become the standard? Because I see 6 plants as becoming the standard now. Why? Why? Well, what's the magical about 6 plants or 5 or 8, right? Did anyone do any analysis on this, or is that just a number picked out of the air? And is that going to become our standard across the nation? And if it does, then you got to ask, well, why? Because if all the states allowed for home cultivation of 4 to 6 plants, why would you keep a limit of it being just 4 to 6? Because having more than that would mean you'd grow commercially. Well, if you did grow commercially, to whom are you selling? I mean, these are the things I think about. moving forward, what is going to be the next weird situation we deal with? The unintended consequences of cannabis legalization. There's a story I wanted to get to, and I rambled a little too far to get to it in this segment, and we'll talk about this a little bit, perhaps in a future episode. But it's a story out of Vice News, and I'm loving Vice. Vice News talking about how Canadian medical marijuana producers are becoming the first dominant force in the international marijuana market. And yeah, there's an international marijuana market aside from the one we've all dealt with, but a legit market, we should say. But, places, first of all, Canada and the Netherlands are the only, according to this Vice story, are the only two nations that have approved the cultivation of medical marijuana for export. And they're currently exporting it to places like New Zealand, Australia, Chile, Brazil, Croatia, other countries that have medical marijuana programs. And currently one of the firms negotiating with Germany, looking to be the provider of medical cannabis to Germany. And it just frustrates me that Canada is getting to be first in the market at this when we grow so much better weed in the United States. Yeah, I said it. I dropped the gauntlet. We grow such good weed in the U.S. I'm not saying Canada's weed is bad by any measure. No. Just saying we got lower latitudes and more farmland and more diversity. And there's no reason American cannabis could not dominate these markets, aside from our federal government keeping it in this ridiculous Schedule 1. We shall see. But Canada, we're watching you, and we're going to be on your heels. All right, stay tuned. We'll be back in a couple minutes to close up shop with a story about cops, gummies, and New York.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from The Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
It's time for Cannabis Facts About Alzheimer's from Robert Platshorn's thesilvertour.org. This message is supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com. A new Florida study in the journal Molecular and Cellular Neuroscience found that cannabis promotes the growth of healthy new brain tissue. It can slow the effects of Alzheimer's and may, in fact, be able to halt it entirely. A long-term study by Ohio State University's Professor Gary Wenk concludes that people who regularly use marijuana get Alzheimer's at a much lower rate than others. This was Cannabis Facts from thesilvertour.org, an educational nonprofit supported by our donors and Hemp Inc., a public company poised to lead America's hemp revolution at hempinc.com.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
I'm Russ Belville with The Marijuana Agenda. Join me every 2 weeks for the Cannabis Minority Report from the Minority Cannabis Business Association. Learn more at mjagenda.com/about.
It's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. Call in now at 650-LEGAL-MJ.
That one goes out to all our Swedish listeners. As we close up shop here at the Marijuana Agenda, one more story to get to. And this one comes to us from the Facebook page of the Ramapo, New York, or Ramapo? Ramapo? I'm going to say Ramapo. It sounds like Ram a police officer. Ramapo, I'm going with it. The Ramapo Police Department on their Facebook page posted the following. On Sunday, May 14th, 2017, at approximately 5:30 p.m., RPD was called to the emergency room at Good Samaritan Hospital for a reported 10-year-old that overdosed. Upon the arrival at the hospital, the investigating officer was advised that the 10-year-old had ingested sour gummy candy containing 250 milligrams of THC. Tetrahydrocannabinol is a compound in marijuana responsible for the psychoactive effect. The child's father, a 37-year-old male from Spring Valley, New York, was arrested and charged with endangering the welfare of a child. The child was treated and released from the hospital. At this time, there is no evidence that the father or child had a prescription to legally possess this item. RPD is continuing with this investigation. With the recent legalization of medical marijuana in the state of New York, RPD wants to remind everyone that just as any other drug, prescribed or not, there are precautions that must be taken to protect others, especially young children. Please keep your medicine out of the hands of children and teens. Know what you have and where it is, always. Okay, so a few things about this. Number one, I love the concluding paragraph. I love the cop saying, hey, it's medicine, and like any medicine, keep it out of the hands of your kids. That's a fair thing to say. Thank you. That's good. I like that. Now the rest of it. Prescription to legally possess the item. There is no such thing as a prescription for medical cannabis. It is a recommendation. Please adjust your terminology. Now, finally, the first paragraph. This is the one that gives me a problem because they say at 5:30 p.m., the cops were called to the ER at the hospital. So somebody at the hospital, upon treating this child for the gummy THC problem, then called the cops. Got a problem with that. You want to ensure that the next parent doesn't take their kid to the ER if they get into the marijuana gummies? This is how you do it. See, the first responders, the medical treatment personnel, should not be narking on the patients that come in having problems with their ingestion of drugs. It's counterintuitive. It just guarantees they don't want to come see you next time. And for medical professionals, you all swear to this oath, first do no harm, right? Reporting someone to the police for overdosing on a drug, and I'm not just talking about the kid with the gummies here, any drug, any overdose, reporting them to the authorities is just a great way to see more harm. So I don't understand what they're doing in Ramapo there at the Good Samaritan Hospital, calling the cops for a kid who'd gotten into the marijuana gummies. And especially, the child was treated and released, which all of the kids that get into the marijuana gummies are, right? It's not a cool thing. I'm not saying that, hey, get your kid loaded on the gummies. But I am saying, as far as terrible accidents your kid could have, ingesting the marijuana gummies is way down on the list of scary, okay? It can be unnerving. They'll get vertigo. They get extremely lethargic, sleepy, drooly maybe. You keep them hydrated. You give them a little bit of food. You'll let them sleep it off, and they're fine. So it's not the scariest thing in the world. So now, in this, they say, in this case, when I was looking up the report on it, they reported how the man is going to be, or it's in this right here, was arrested and charged with endangering the welfare of a child. And this is something I want to get into because you always get this endangerment of a child when they're caught with illegal drugs and the kids are getting into them. But rarely do you see this when they're caught with legal drugs. Well, the first thing I did when I saw this story this morning is I did a Google News search on child endangerment prescription to see, could I find stories where some kid got into the oxys or the fentanyls or the whatever, the benzos, and then do the police then rush to charge them with child endangerment? I found this story to Rankin County, Mississippi. Toddler got into mother's prescribed medicine. Child's recovering after swallowing a pill. The Rankin County Sheriff's Office told Three on Your Side the child was taken to Blair E. Batson, where he appears to be okay, but is being kept overnight for observation. Investigators said the mother was at home when the accident happened. There's an investigation underway to determine if child neglect played a role. DHS is aware of the incident. There's an investigation. They didn't rush to throw child endangerment. Boom! We caught you with a drug. Boom! Child endangerment. No. Prescription drug. Well, Maybe there was some neglect involved. We'll have to see. It's all up in the air. We don't know yet. But every other story I found on that Google News search of child endangerment prescription, I found a lot of them, people charged with child endangerment, where they found prescription drugs. But they'd also found cocaine, or they'd also found meth, or they'd also found weed, or they'd also found that the prescription drugs weren't legal for them. They were illicit. People with their legal prescription drugs, their kids getting into them, couldn't find a single story of child endangerment. Thanks for joining us, folks.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and SoundCloud. And follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Time flies when you legalize. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers. You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down.